Jackson of Green Ronin Publishing, line developer of Mutants and Masterminds, and you're listening to The Gamer's Haven.
Well, welcome back to The Gamer's Haven podcast. We're still in our shiny studio.
We haven't recorded in a while.
No, we haven't recorded in a while.
No.
It's that
and the spellcasting.
The mountains of cocaine that come with playing Dungeons & Dragons.
We have cocaine?
Well, if we do, no one's told me.
I think
me.
It's on the powdered donuts.
Oh, really?
That would explain why those are so popular at the games.
Yeah, that's true.
That would, really.
We should have Gamer Haven powdered donuts.
Gamer's Haven cocaine donuts?
Yeah. Doing lines on the table.
Cocaine donuts. Like,
okay. We are so going to be listened to by the FBI, and we're going to have a file this big.
I hope so.
That would be
FBI,
so
if you're
awesome.
Listening, you should play
if
more.
If they want to raid our studio, they're more than welcome to, because then we can sue them.
That's true.
Granted, hey. It would take several years, but hey, it happened to Steve Jackson.
Well, you know.
It happened to Steve Jackson?
Yeah, back in the early 90s with...
Yeah.
They were raided by the Secret Service.
Back in the
early 90s, because they were doing research for the cyberpunk.
Oh, yeah, that's
and,
right.
They actually talked to a lot of hackers and whatnot, and the Secret Service got wind of it and raided the offices of Steve Jackson Games, and Steve Jackson Games was more or less shut down for a while, and he had to fire 70% of his workforce. And they came in. They didn't find any obvious. They didn't find anything.
Obviously,
intrepid Secret Service agent did see a copy of the cyberpunk game and decided that it looked suspicious. So they confiscated all the copies of it. And
then played at home.
After lots of litigation, Steve Jackson obviously took him to court, took him to federal court, and got compensation for it and got the books back. And I believe the Secret Service was trying to argue, truthfully, was trying to argue that their raid actually increased awareness and increased the sales of Steve Jackson games. And I believe the judge looked at him and said, so let me get this straight. The... You know, raiding Mr. Jackson's business here, having him fire 70% of his workforce, costing him this amount of money was good for his business.
No.
Well, that's the great thing about America. When the government screws up, you can sue them.
Yeah, but Steve Jackson is apparently very tired of telling the story now. So.
Yeah. Well, you can tell the story for him.
I heard it on the time I heard him tell about it was on most recently Pulp Gamer. He did an interview on Pulp Gamer and told about it, which is very amusing. But yes.
Well, they won't find our secret, base anyway.
I still like to think that the Secret Service just raided him because they wanted to get free copies of Cyberpunk.
Probably, yeah.
And they needed to do something because obviously they weren't doing police work.
Not at the time.
Not at the time. Yeah.
Well, investigating all those powdered donut factories wasn't working out.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I don't know. If the FBI raided us, I don't know what they'd get, really.
Well, we have the thermal, nuclear weapons, and we have the biochemical lab, the arcane lab.
There's the Mansquito and Mansquita.
The Mansquito and Mansquita. They don't work close.
Oh, the Mansquito and Paulita the Mansquita.
We have the time-traveling devices, the lightsabers, the large death rays.
Genetically engineered
death rays.
No, I got a license for them, so we can put them back together.
Oh, right. Okay.
Surprisingly, if
you... print those licenses on your computer?
No.
Well,
They're licensed under the state of Gamer's Haven.
Yeah, I found out it was kind of strange. If you actually take the licenses to the government, they're quite willing.
Really?
It's like $5.
All right, then.
Yeah, it was cheap as chips. I didn't have to print anything off
of my
printer.
They might be kind of annoyed with, us generating our own money.
That's true. Well, today our topic of discussion is the gender roles in gaming, and since we're a bunch of guys,
only guys play.
We kidnapped two gamer women. I know they're really rare, and you rarely ever see them, but we found two out on the street, drugged them, and dragged them in.
Really?
Yeah.
Was drugging involved?
Yes. For
that's
you,
new for me.
I don't know.
Mine came willingly. I don't know what's wrong with you guys.
I just offered to
see. I was too lazy. I didn't go out there, so they drugged him and got married to him or something. But
Throgged and Mary.
When we come back from the break, we're going to jump into that. So.
Wow, that's the news to me. I didn't realize we drugged and married them.
It might have been the other way around. I don't know.
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh! End of line. This is the Vorpal Network.
We are back, and today on the show we are talking about gender roles in gaming.
Gender roles.
So we've got both the male and female perspective, and also the male perspective of the female perspective, and maybe the female perspective of the male perspective. But when you're running a game or when you're playing in a game, it's something you obviously have to take into account.
Are our games sexist?
Yes.
I think it ultimately depends on the group you have.
Well, okay.
I favor the women always in my games.
From our point of
I'm
view,
I'm sexist. Though, what can I say?
Are our games sexist?
Well, you're just a lesbian trapped in a man's body.
I think my games.
Well, you know, I just can't help that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think my game's sexist. I kind of do a little bit on purpose, and so far I haven't been shot down.
What, your Rusk women? They're not sexist. What?
Damn hot! Don't you watch television?
Just insert picture of any Avalanche Press game right
cover.
There,
and
you. Yeah, I do. I do wish Avalanche Press hadn't forced all that upon us gamers.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
that was a little bit extreme.
You take the role playing game. So.
Yeah, it hits the role playing game.
Well, I think gaming is predominantly, at least, viewed as a male industry.
Yeah, viewed as it,
and it's even marketed that way. I think.
Well, chainmail bikini chicks. You know,
that's true.
At the
true.
Different.
There is even a company that's called Chainmail Bikini Games.
Well, that's just funny, though. Mm-hmm. But is it funny or not? I mean,
I really don't know what they do.
But I remember Gen Con, and you go to the sword places, and mm-hmm. you have chainmail bikini chicks everywhere. And
yeah, and ones that you really wish would wear something underneath the chainmail bikini.
Well, one would also say they wouldn't sell, they wouldn't market that stuff or sell that stuff if people didn't buy it.
That's true.
That's the sad thing.
And you know, Avalanche Press made money of
oh,
some
yeah.
sort.
Mm-hmm. Considering how many books they put out, one had to sell something, somewhat. Well, they had, what, 5 books out a month or something? It was crazy.
No. They're not mongoose. They're not shotgun.
They're not like 200 books a month.
No. Nobody's Nobody
Although,
puts out that many
have
books.
Have you guys seen the Avalanche Press books?
Nope.
Yeah, my favorite one was the lady in the thong bikini, the leather thong bikini in 3 feet of snow.
There's
right.
Yeah,
there's
the barbarian book. I'm like, oh yeah, barbarian.
There's always been hot chicks and fancy.
See if I can load up some of the covers for you.
This is ridiculous. This actually made us just kind of go, where?
Yeah,
we were bothered by the.
I was offended at it just for being a male gamer and looking
so
at it going.
Much of it.
Come on, people.
It wasn't just like a little bit.
Yeah,
it's in every book.
I like tits as much as the next guy, but. If you're trying to have an industry that you want to have taken seriously,
putting that much TNA on the covers,
yeah, it was ridiculous.
You're gonna get laughed at.
I never even opened the books to see if they're any good.
No, I wouldn't even touch them. I looked at them, and went, whoa, well, that's just wrong. For all we know, they could be great books, but they need to change the covers.
Well, they just need to.
I guess I'm
calm down.
That's highly marketable to. A large amount of
men.
Male.
Yeah. It's
the
not
younger
it's definitely
male
not going to do well for the females.
Going to go for that.
Not just
it doesn't,
the gamers, I think.
Well, yeah. And it doesn't really offend me. I just think it's stupid.
Yeah.
I prob- probably wouldn't pick up the book and look at it either, because I'd be like, well, that's clearly stupid. But
if the cover's that bad, how bad is the material inside?
Yeah. If they had to rely on that, do I really care enough to check out what's inside the cover? And the answer is no, I don't care.
Do they look like romance novel covers?
I'm loading them up
minus
here.
Minus the clothes?
No,
and minus the man.
They barely have clothes.
I don't think a single. I think I saw one single cover that had a guy on the front of it, and he had like eight women on the cover with him. It was. There's almost never any guys on the covers.
Avalanche Press seemed to be the one that was focusing so much on that for selling stuff.
And they're not even the ones that did the book of erotic.
Chainmail Bikini, they actually have a funny book. The Chainmail Bikini book that I downloaded is really freaking funny. You can build a chainmail bikini for your character, and it's like plate mail, and it's just ridiculous.
For example, here is their Celtic Age source book, The Little People.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
It looks like a lingerie model.
That's what I
with fairy wings.
Too.
Yeah.
That doesn't look like a book cover.
It's a Celtic fairy.
It doesn't. They don't look like gaming books.
Yeah. No, they look like publicized smut that you'd find in the bookstores where people wear the coats and cover the sides of their faces so people can't see them.
It looks like she's trying to sell underwear.
Yeah.
It looks like Victoria's.
Were their legs spread like that?
Yeah. Here is Jade and Steel role playing in Mythic China.
Okay.
She's not as bad. She's not nearly as bad as the fairy, but
the fairy that's sitting there. Yeah, that's just wrong.
And now
spread-eagled.
Give you my personal favorite, the Viking Age. role-playing the myths, heroes, and monsters of the Viking Age.
Yeah.
That's the lady in the little leather thong bikini in the snow, isn't it?
For a book, I mean, that's the whole selling point. We're not talking about, like, okay, this book... I mean, that's all you see is the first thing. And for me, I'm like, hey, that's a cool picture.
Endless Sands, Arabian's Adventures.
Okay, now that one's just...
Whoa.
Is she even wearing anything on top? She has pasties?
I haven't seen that one.
That one looks like a rose.
Get a little bit closer, Nathan.
I was like, I can't see that one. I've never seen that book. It's like,
I wanted to see the pasties, too.
She's wearing pasties.
You didn't give them your hands and knees to crawl closer to
That's because I'm 8 feet away from the screen.
That's true.
Yeah, I know.
You guys are much closer than I am.
But it's still fun to give you crap.
Twilight of Atlantis, maybe?
Nice.
I can't see it from over here, but it looks pretty bad. All I can see is like the outline shape of the...
Again.
Yeah.
Sit on my hands and knees like a dog.
Then you see they also do... They do their oddball covers, like The Last Days of Constantinople, where there is nary a woman to be seen on the cover. And it's not bad.
There's nothing wrong with a woman on
the
cover.
Well, they seem to have good artwork,
the dragon, what is it? The steampunk series.
They're clearly not trying to market the quality of the book.
They're clearly marketing to, not children. not female gamers, I would say.
Well, and we have to be fair,
though.
And also
keep in mind, some of those books are Origins Award-winning.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad, but I'd never actually read the
which
book.
Which has issues in and of itself.
But at the same time, we do have to keep in mind that fantasy games have had almost naked women for a long time.
That is true. I mean, some of the classic D&D artwork
fantasy is...
Look at the Gore series, the Tarnsman.
Look at the Conan stuff.
Yeah. Conan killed, and Conan had women.
And getting even away from the fantasy stuff is you even have, the roles of men and women in like a sci-fi game, like in Star Wars.
Yeah.
There aren't too many strong female characters in Star Wars, even less so in
Star
Trek.
Who wants to play Princess Leia?
And who wants to play Amidala? I mean, come on, what did she do?
You can wear the gold bikini if you want, but are you a strong character?
It's really sad. That's the one thing most people remember her for.
And with the chainmail bikini book, that gold bikini will give you the same defense as plate mail.
Although, to be fair, the only time she really killed anybody and did useful stuff was when she was in the chainmail.
That's not true.
She shot a hell of a lot of stormtroopers.
Yeah, but those are stormtroopers.
Yeah,
But that was after the chainmail became
really. Troopers versus choking Jabba the Hutt with the chain.
Chain. That was pretty badass.
So what do they say? You have to wear a chainmail bikini to gain the power?
That's right.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
Well, damn, I'm always going to be forever weak.
It takes the rage of being chained up in a metal bikini.
It's cold. There's a giant lizardy thing trying to lick you.
I can speak from experience, and Nathan can even can as well. The years of going to Gen Con has, I think, the number of females at Gen Con has actually gone up. Which is very nice to see, and
it's just kind of surprising when you run into someone at the shop and you're talking to them, and the girl's like, "Oh, by the way, we're running a game later. Do you want to join us?" And you go, "What? You're running a game? Yeah, right. I'm running a game." And you're going, "Well, see, you're running a game."
I know. Really? I know. I think it was Robin. You went into a game store, and it was there. Some game stores, the patrons are like, "Oh my god, it's a girl."
Some of them you go into and it's perfectly fine. They're like, "Hello, spend money here," just like any other store.
Right, like.
And sometimes you go into a gaming store and it's like they've never seen a woman before. And I know female gamers are not that rare.
And and I'm sure they sort of patronize you a little bit. These are dice.
Yeah.
You're like, "Yeah, I know, that's a D20. You know what it's used for?
You roll these dice."
Very patronizing, right over you, breathing down your neck. It's really weird.
Mm-hmm.
But
look at the kick.
But like I actually said, don't have that experience in a gaming store.
You're very lucky.
You've never gone to a gaming store without me, though, really, have you?
Now, which was the one that you
went
to?
And
Tabletop is a different experience. It's a great store.
That was Battle Zone in Lawrence, Battle Kansas, which is now out of business, thank God.
No, it's not.
It's in Olathe.
It's over by the
AMC. One over by AMC 30.
No, the one in Lawrence one.
Oh, yeah, the one in Lawrence.
That's where it happened in Lawrence. That's where I always had problems in that store.
Yeah.
Female gamers being really rare is more of a stereotype than anything else.
You know what's really weird about that? I used to game there every Thursday night with a couple people. One of the people that worked there, and he'd run the game. And we had two women in our gaming group. Never had any problems with it.
I think a good general concept of gaming in general is that it's a male.
Sam was not.
It's a male hobby, and that it is a hobby for very introverted people, and I think commonly people will look at, oh, they're introverted, meaning it's an introverted guy he's not going to be talking to girls, and that's a stereotype that people get for gamers and have had for gamers for years.
Yeah, well, that doesn't fit me at all.
For the longest time, I just assumed that the women and female gamers, there weren't any, and they just had better things to do.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything sexist. I just assumed they had better things to do
with their time.
For like early on, I would never ask a girl to, "You want to come and game?" No, because I have better things to do. You know, it just wasn't one of those things that you'd think about.
Mm-hmm. I have better things to do, but I would rather play Dungeons and Dragons.
Which is why. Yes.
That's why
he married her.
I married my wife for a lot more than gaming, although that is a small chunk.
It's only the gaming, honey.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Yes. It's the only reason they got married. At their wedding, they just rolled D20s just to see how things would turn out.
It was actually a D&D game.
Happy to marry you.
Yeah.
The orcs are coming in.
Do you take Jeremy to be your lawfully wedded husband? Hang on. Yes, I do.
I brought treasure.
So everyone knows the wedding was not like that. It was a normal wedding.
I passed my wedding save.
There was nobody had a sword. Nobody was dressed up as the role-playing character.
Well, ours was quite normal.
No, no cosplay.
No. And Robin wouldn't let us carry Uzis underneath her.
There was no Uzis.
I was willing to let them carry MAC-10s, but they couldn't carry Uzis because Uzis are illegal. MAC-10s are not automatic, so they're legal. You guys could carry MAC-10s, but you had to pay for them yourself.
Not the same.
No, they couldn't, because at your reception hall there were lots of pictures all over the door saying no guns. It's very important that you not bring guns in. You not take guns outside the hall.
Well, you guys,
it was a golf course.
Yeah, you guys couldn't carry the guns into the reception, but at the wedding you could have worn MAC-10s.
Oh.
Yeah.
Here you go.
They should have had a gun check at the front. Yes.
Everyone said we looked like mafia men when we walked in with our black suits, with our black shirts.
We did totally look like the mafia.
We were awesome.
Oh, yes.
I think we got sidetracked.
We did. But we did. But with generals in, I mean, this is in the gaming hobby in and of itself, but in the actual game, I know as far as like going to a convention and whatnot in gaming, it's a you know, jumping on in, you typically get a sort of eclectic mix of people. And more within the last several years, you've had more women showing up and participating in games, which I think is fantastic. I think with from the male perspective of joining into a game, I think typically people are always going to think that, oh, I'm going to join this game group, and I know typically you're going to think that there's going to be predominantly more men than women. And that's not always the case, but when you get into this hobby, that's what you're going to expect, is to run into more men than you do women.
Well, and also a lot of the games seem to be set up that, yes, you're trying to get the treasure, but in some of the games, part of the treasure is saving the princess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So is there a game that...
I think most gaming products are written to men rather
than...
They're
catered to male gaming audience.
And I hate it when they try too hard to not be catered to the male audience, like when they always talk about, like, the D&D books, instead of saying so-and-so does this, he, blah, it's always she did this.
Right.
She did that.
I noticed that.
Trying too hard. And that, I'm female, that bothers me. On a grammatical level as well as just, I feel like I'm being pandered to.
Mm-hmm.
Don't read the fairy tale book,
then. I can
see
that. I can definitely see that.
It's all she.
You are.
It's all she.
You are being pandered to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is.
That's the author or even an editor being trying to say, wait, we need to have more of a feminine feel to this book, so let's change these he's to she's.
Well, and all they really need is to have a strong female character.
But I know what you're meaning. I know what you mean. There are sometimes where reading the book, it's very natural, and you read it, and it's no problem, but you can tell when they've gone specifically in to change that from a male perspective to female perspective.
Though, do you also notice that a lot of the female roles in the book are based on certain classes? Like, in the D&D books, it's, is there a female warrior that's their generic? No.
They don't showcase a female fighter. They showcase a female...
Thief.
Thief, wizard, druid.
Yeah. Do we want to have a female half-orc? No, we don't.
No, but...
but is there one? Seriously, I mean, is there one who's a barbarian? No.
Well, I think you can also agree, part of, especially D&D and part of gaming, is you want to go against stereotypes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, how many times have we all done this? Now, I personally have never done the cross-gender thing, where I've never run a female character.
Transgendered?
Just because the way I look at it is I'm not going to think like a woman, so why should I play a woman? I don't think I'd play her correctly, so I just don't do it. That's just the way I always feel about it. But Robin, I know, and... You've played male characters before, and I think, haven't you, Becca?
I have not.
You have not?
I played a male character once, and actually, I started out playing that male character to... This is terrible, and I don't recommend it. I did it to spite another character, who always played women.
Mm-hmm. Now, come think of it,
is that Eric?
Eric?
No, Mike. I'm talking about the character. Oh.
Oh, yeah, Eric.
Yeah.
It was, character named Eric, and it ended up being a lot of fun. He was one of my favorite characters, probably the character I've played the longest, but I've never been very feminine. Like, mm-hmm. I don't look manly or anything like that, but...
No, my wife does not have a mustache.
That's Jeremy.
I've never had a lot of feminine ideals, I guess. Mm-hmm. I've never been very interested in feminine pursuits. Like, I wasn't the little girl playing with dolls or anything
like
that.
When I met you, you had already gotten into the whole gaming thing. I know Becca You got into it when you started dating.
No, she did not. She had played her first game about 4 months before she ever even met me.
Yes.
And I was actually pulled, I won't say pulled in, but...
lured.
Convinced.
She was lured into playing games.
I was convinced to start gaming by a woman, actually.
Yeah,
well,
so was I.
Did you do Knarr, though?
No, I didn't.
No, she's never done Knarr.
I've only worked out at Renaissance Fest.
Yeah,
oh, the Ren Fest, okay.
Yeah, that's how she knows most of the people from Knarr.
I couldn't remember if it was Knarr or Ren Fest.
Ren Fest.
Because we met a couple times. We met through Justin. But I couldn't remember if it was Knarr or Renfest.
It was Renfest. She never went to Knarr.
No.
Nor shall she ever at this point.
But how was getting into the gaming thing? Did you guys have any preconceptions to it? Because I know
to start.
I was brought into it by a family member. So
me too.
Didn't you go?
Never really even thought much about it. I guess I thought it was really geeky, but I'd always been really geeky. And actually, I was lured into it because I'd been listening to a friend talk constantly about what happened at their gaming sessions on Saturdays. And I was like, it sounded fun. And
what do you mean? They're not going through steam tunnels? Oh,
wait. And one evening, they were short a couple of players, and they wanted to play anyway, so they called me up to see if I wanted to make a character. And since it was all very impromptu and I was just filling in, I didn't feel very nervous, like I had to live up to anything. I think otherwise I would have been very nervous and uncomfortable because I didn't know the rules and it seemed really, really complicated. That was my first impression of it, very complicated.
Was that before or after the D&D movie?
That was after the D&D movie,
exactly.
Actually.
Exactly, I wanted to pull that up.
One of my roommates in college was into role-playing games, and I never knew much about it from her, but I went with the University of Kansas' role-playing club.
Cougar.
Cougar, to the Dungeons & Dragons movie. And I thought that that was about the dumbest thing I'd ever seen, but so did all of they. So that didn't really affect my feelings about Dungeons & Dragons one way or another. Honestly, other than that, my biggest experience with Dungeons & Dragons was the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon from when I was little.
Oh, that was terrible, too.
Well, even, and especially back then when that was made, I would say, entirely a gift towards a male audience.
Well, the one chick didn't wear clothes.
And
she had a rod,
She had an extendable rod. And
I was like,
And the other woman turned invisible.
Yeah,
I think those were the only two, there were only two women in that, wasn't there?
Yeah.
But at the same time,
what does that say about society?
At the same time, the first gamer I ever knew was...
We're getting very Freudian now.
My college roommate, who was female, obviously. And I was drug into it by another woman who was playing in a game that had actually two women playing in it, and mm-hmm. I was the third. So it didn't seem as male-dominated.
Well, it was definitely interesting playing in a group that was made up made at least...
50%.
It was more than 50% because the game group we jumped in on was the three girls and me and Andrew.
Uh-huh. And then me GMing.
And you GMing. So it was more than 50% women. Hmm.
Well, why do you like the role play? Well, like when you look at it, when you have a character and you're playing a character, why do you like running that character? Why do you like getting into the game?
Well, I'm honestly not sure. It's just fun. It's a different perspective on things. You don't necessarily have to feel the same way about... Like, your character doesn't have to feel about things the way you feel about things. So there are a lot of different opportunities to create different characters. I like that. The same way I like video games. The same way I like video games, I like to go and beat stuff up. It's fun in role-playing games, it's fun in video games.
So, playing, because you've played in Ethan's game, and you've played in my game, I don't know if you've played in any
She's never played. No, she's never played in one of my games.
Games. Do you think, because you know me and how I kind of have a tongue-in-cheek, and that's why I stated at the beginning, my games are sexist, but I try to keep it funny mm-hmm.
But there's different types of a game being sexist. There's your type of being sexist, and then there's Evil Mike's way of sexist.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, which, you know, which is, Mike,
there's your tongue-in-cheek sexist, then there's insulting sexist.
There's Evil Mike, who made us conform to medieval society's female roles, which was boring. Being treated sexist in the game is in being very limited in what we're allowed to do.
Right, and goes back to one of the overriding concepts of the show is that communication between GM and players, I think, is key. And if you have... You need to tailor your game to your audience. Like, I would never have a... I would never toss in a game where I want everyone to be prim and proper and the women stay at home and the men go out and do
like
their
Pride and Prejudice.
That's just ridiculous.
But does that help? Does that help?
Like a Jane Austen role-playing game. That's not going to happen ever.
But does it help when you run into characters? Because there's societies on the worlds that do have those type of... But does it make those characters immediately, those NPCs, bad guys? Or
no.
And I'm just curious.
It's just when you're forced into doing something that you don't specifically want
to
do.
It's
not.
It's the PC portion. It's like, as long as the PCs have the ability to play what you want.
Yeah. If you aren't allowed to play what you want, it's no fun.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's... But, I mean, no matter what, the game is going to be kind of sexist if it's even remotely real, because... Sorry to say it, society is sexist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the game's
so
also
going
male-centric.
To save the princess doesn't actually bother you.
No.
Because there might be money, you might be able to beat shit up.
Yeah.
Rebecca,
what do you like about role-playing games?
Or why did you get into
it? I want to answer your question that you just asked.
What makes you like the game and get into the game?
What makes me like playing the characters that I play is a little bit different from what Robin said. I like to play characters that I identify with in my head that I don't necessarily... that I wouldn't be in real life.
Okay.
I play a lot of... I like to play cute. Sometimes, for lack of a better word...
Slutty?
That was not exactly as strong, or that was a little bit stronger than
let's
I
see.
Flirtatious?
Flirtatious. A lot of your characters I know in my games have been very flirtatious.
Because that
even the one that was definitely not a prostitute.
Definitely not a prostitute.
That is how I think I would be if I was more... I was more along the social norm.
Is it an escapism?
I would say yes.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, the same goes for me, Matt.
I do like the combat aspect of it as well.
Well, I think definitely the character you're playing in Jeremy's game now is the most masculine character I've seen you play.
Yeah.
Yes, I would agree. I'm playing a barbarian who... I've always actually been
that
interested
kills
in
things.
Playing
and kills them well.
Kills things and kills the men out of her bed in the morning after she gets done using them.
It's like closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
But I'm gonna explain to you how I got started gaming, because I think it's a little bit... it might be similar to what a lot of people experience, actually. I had been interested in Dungeons & Dragons specifically since I was in high school. I might have invited myself, but I don't remember. Obviously, the guy I liked at the time was involved, so I might have invited myself. Anyway, it never got past... We met one night, and it never got past character generation. And, you know, I bought a book and everything, so I knew what it was about. But I never got involved with it. And
she has an old 2.5 player's handbook.
Yeah, I had one of the old books.
Yeah, way back in the years of 2.0.
And,
I loved 2.0.
The next time... And I knew that a lot of my friends actually... in college and right out of college, I knew a lot of my friends were involved in it. And I was interested, but I really wanted to sit in and watch a game. But a lot of the people who ran games didn't want people to do that, which is understandable for some of them. Some
yeah,
of them
it's different GMs do things differently. Yeah, and some don't like the distraction.
Yeah, it's kind of hard having somebody watch, and you also you get the feeling that
you get very self-conscious as a GM from the GM's perspective. You get very self-conscious about it.
Okay, but yeah, that's why I didn't get involved right away because I was like, I really don't know what's going on. I would like to know what's going on before I get involved. And I just got a call one night from a friend of mine, a female friend of mine. She wanted me to come over and, you know, start and join their game. I think they were losing some people.
They lost two people.
They're going to be losing some players. And she thought I would enjoy it, which was very nice of her. I only knew, I knew her the best, and I knew one other person just through a couple meetings. I didn't really know him very well. I did not know the person running the game. I did not know the other people who were playing. So I was very nervous, and it took about 2 to 3 hours to actually build a character. One of the players sat down, someone I didn't know, sat down with me and helped me draw out the character I wanted to play. And to this day, that is my favorite character that I have ever played.
What character was it?
Shadow.
She was a rogue. She's an elf rogue named Shadow, and she is my absolute favorite character who eventually got killed off because the GM didn't want to play anymore.
Well, she didn't die. She was transported to a different planet.
She did die. It was the only character who survived was my woman friend.
Yeah, that's in that realm of existence.
So I was very, very.
Never die. They just don't stay in the area.
That's true. Sometimes you can edit those deaths.
Just get adapted from
Andrew and I had two characters that were officially killed off because we went on vacation and the GM didn't like that. So instead, we just transferred them to Ethan's world. It worked that well.
Jeremy was one of the missing players that I got called in to replace. Not when he was. That's not when his character was killed off.
No.
That was.
That's when we went on vacation.
That all happened later on, but they were on vacation for some week, and they wanted to play anyway, so they called me in, and I got back, and they were very angry because in the time they were gone, I had found a very powerful magic sword.
Actually, I showed up, and I was like, "What is this girl doing with that magic sword?"
That girl was swinging that magic sword very well, by the way. I picked up on Dungeons & Dragons 2.0 very fast. I missed Thacko.
They were destined to be married at that moment.
Someday, I'm going to have a character named Thacko Johnson.
Thacko Johnson.
I miss Thacko. I liked Thacko.
Well, I got a couple other questions, really. When it comes to the role-playing and the gaming worlds and such. Because I asked you both what you like about it. Both of you in combat, escapism, doing things that you wouldn't necessarily do yourselves, or you may want to, but or just doing something completely opposite. But what things about a lot of the, just in general, and you can use any of the different games, what things do you not like about it? Or what things do you not, that you'd like to see change, maybe overall, or just, like, or maybe you haven't even put much thought into it. I mean, I don't know.
That'd be me. I have not put much thought into that.
I haven't put much thought into that.
About D&D when you guys
or not even just D&D, just role-playing.
Some games, the combat goes very slow.
Yes, that's true.
Which one was it that you had to have a degree in accounting to actually be able to figure out whether you're good enough? Champions?
I actually dislike playing spellcasters because it is very hard for me to think that far ahead.
And spellcasters?
I don't like spellcasters because they're so weak at low levels in the current D&D system.
And
a lot of other systems at low level, I mean, you get hit once and you're dead, and you're totally useless because you don't have any spells, or you have so few.
I think that permeates Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
You could say Call of Cthulhu to an extent, but Call of Cthulhu is, you're up against such nasty things.
Really,
the thing with magic in Call of Cthulhu isn't that their magic users are weaker, it's their sanity is lower,
It's to say that just magic users are weak in Call of Cthulhu is just ridiculous. Everybody's weak in Call of Cthulhu, except
the only spellcaster that I ever played that I didn't feel like I was massively underpowered compared to the other characters at a low level was probably the original Earth Dawn.
Yeah.
I played an Earth Dawn Elementalist.
They did a really good job.
Yeah, I personally have never played Earth Dawn.
And I felt like that was really well balanced. Like, I wasn't more powerful than the other characters, but I wasn't a pathetic weakling that just stood back during combat waiting to level up either.
Smurf.
Sorry, you got a ton of spells starting off in that game, and you could hold your own if you had to.
And also with spellcasters, it's one of those things that with warriors, you can kind of just go into a game and just play.
Yeah.
Spellcasters take a lot of... If the GM... It has to be like a combination of both the GM and the player, because a lot of times... You can either put it all in the GM, which I sometimes feel with particular players.
Is a necessity.
Or you put it all in the player, which isn't fair either, because...
Especially if they're new to the system.
Yeah, you got with spellcasters, one, you have to baby at low levels right now, and two, you kind of have to work both ways. You have to be like, the GM has to do extra work, and so does the player.
Yeah. That's why I like playing, if I'm going to play, I'm not very good at using spellcasters like mages and sorcerers because of the fact that you have to know what you're going to cast. It's very hard for me to pick out what I'm going to cast. That's why I like clerical casters, because
clerics and sorcerers at least have a little
clerics
bit.
Clerics go, okay, these are the spells I know, I need to cast this, I can pray for this, and I can use it.
We're hoping 4th edition
picks
some of
them. I enjoy playing clerics, and I enjoy playing fighters. I've found I don't like mages.
Have any of us ever actually been in a game, played in a game that was run by a woman?
Yes.
Yes.
I have.
I have
not.
I have.
At Gen Con.
I have not.
Earth Dawn was run by a woman.
My first Gen Con game was run by a woman, and she was awesome. We played orcs, and our goal was to get the magic juju stick, and it was a great game. That was a full table, and
What would you say are the major differences between a man running a game and a woman running a game? Is there like huge differences in that style? I mean, obviously, style's going to change from person to person, but...
Well, part of it was an experienced GM, but there was also less combat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there
more
was.
More emphasis on the role-playing.
More emphasis on the role-playing. There were puzzles that we had to get through.
And that was kind of cool, because at that point I was still very much enjoying like the old computer role-playing or adventure games with the point-and-click with all the puzzles. So it was great to hit
that. Lot of guys would rather just smash the shit out of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot more...
We were orcs. Like
it was less combat, more logic.
Knows. Open door, okay, pick lock, okay, bash door in. No picking locks, bash door in.
It's difficult for me to do the heavy role play, which is why I never play a character with high diplomacy, because I don't want to be the one who the whole party relies on.
I played a character that had very high charisma one time. That was Lydia. And I don't have a high charisma. That made it very hard. It's hard to... That's another bad thing about the mages. You can play a character that has very high strength when you don't. How do you roleplay somebody who has an 18 intelligence when you don't?
Right.
You just pretend to be smarter than you really are.
A lot of
that goes to everything, really.
That and charisma are very hard to
Men and women
roleplay.
Handle that differently, too.
Well, and it's a reasonable question to ask your GM. I have an intelligence of 18.
That means I'm like Einstein.
Would I know this? I mean, my mage in your brother's game has an intelligence of 18, and I'm like... would I know this? I mean, come on.
In this setting, would I know this?
It's at times like that where it's really, it's sort of more, should be more a collaborative effort between GM and player.
There is a reason why I usually
you're
play
running
low,
the wisdom
low charisma
of,
rated characters, because I know I don't have a super high charisma.
And I think we did a pretty good job with the character that had the really high charisma. I mean... I didn't necessarily have to roleplay out everything I was going to say to people because I don't have that high charisma, but you can do a role to see how
Something
people
like that,
would
you
react.
Wanna...
By the end of that campaign, I think that character had, like, with all of her magic items, bonuses. She must have had a 30 charisma.
Jeez.
It was absolutely ridiculous
because
her spells were based on that, so everything charisma.
Not even to say, how do you play a character with an 18 intelligence? How do you play a character with an 18 charisma? You
know? Yeah.
I mean,
you walk in the room, you
have a smile. I am simply not that charming.
The easiest way to do that is just say, this is what I want to do.
Right.
It was pretty funny when I killed that person with intimidation, though. Oops. I rolled so high on an intimidation check that the woman died of a heart attack after peeing herself. But
that was a collaborative intimidate between your character and my character.
Yeah, that was
great.
That
was very amusing.
I have not actually played in a lot of games with Robin, so.
That is something you have to combine, though. It has to be one of those GM, you know, okay, I want to do this. Okay, make your roll, and you have a charisma of that, so you do this.
Right.
Although I have to admit, I really did enjoy role-playing in the last game where she played a character called Bixia. I really liked Bixia.
Yeah, she was a shrew.
She was awesome.
Definitely not a prostitute.
I would like to go back to that character at some point because it really was, she was just mean. Just...
Well, let's
just
check
not a
out
nice
fourth
person.
Edition.
And Hakon definitely knew she was not a prostitute.
Yes,
what
I like she was not a prostitute.
What I'm probably going to do with all those characters...
The druidess still was sort of up in the air. She liked walking around
naked. What we're going to do with those characters is just take the characters out of where they're at, put them into a whole new setting, and start them at first level in fourth edition, and see how
probably,
things
go. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I still like Jorgen. I very much had fun with him. And it's like, you're going to do this, Hakon. No, I'm not. No, you're going to do what I said, because Mom said I had to make sure you didn't get hurt.
But
no.
Because maybe in 4th edition you'll have more fun with the spellcaster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to try it in 4th edition, since I didn't... I was...
I'd be curious to see how they would work in the Arcana Evolved system with the difference in the spellcasting.
No.
Arcana Evolved is magic heavy. And if you are a spellcaster in Arcana Evolved, I mean, you do a lot more paper. You do a lot more paperwork and a lot more
And not to mention,
out.
Though, at low levels, it still sucks.
Don't get me wrong. I love the magic system in Arcana Evolved. I think it's, like, the best magic system.
But you still feel useless a lot of times. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm running around and I still feel... That's why I just randomly do stupid crap, because I'm just like, well, or people forget I cast spells, because I cast a spell then the game moves on and I'm like, if I cast another spell now, I'm going to be out.
Right.
So I've actually had players go, you actually cast magic? And some of them are kidding, but some of them I don't think are.
They're like, wait, you cast a spell?
Yeah, I have to control how many I cast, because if not, I become a meat target. That's all I'm useful for. Oh, hit me. I have extra hit points for the warrior.
Once you cast all your spells, you stand and your only job is to take point and take the first
and
hit.
I refuse to do that.
Especially with D&D, there's a definite bell curve there. I mean, you reach a plateau where really, I mean, at first level, yes, warriors are going to be out there kicking ass and taking names, and the spellcasters are not. But there reaches a point where the spellcasters do overtake the warriors in death dealing.
But so they cast spells, if that like warrior is
fireball.
Built correctly, though...
Usually that's about at 5th or 6th level when a mage gets access to
fireball.
If that
warrior is built correctly, though, at level 20, if he's built correctly, you cast your spells. If he's still alive... That warrior is going to just screw you. He's just going to kill you. He's going to mow you over.
That's why the mage just plane shifts them to somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because, I don't want to fight him. He goes away.
That is something I don't enjoy as much about role-playing games, is designing a character at first level that's still going to be viable at 20th level, because it's very hard for me. I don't want to go through and read the entire book and learn all the mechanics, because I'm not GMing. And that takes a lot out of it for me if I know what every monster is the second we see it.
Yeah.
I don't like... I guess that leads into metagaming.
Yes,
with
yes
the,
it does.
Now that I know what metagaming is, the first time I heard it, I had to ask, what's metagaming? Because it had never occurred to me that people might do that, because I don't know any of that
like
stuff.
Like last night, I was sitting there the entire time Jeremy was talking about the cat fights and stuff. I was going over in my head, I'm like, oh... It's got to be this. And I thought it was a Rakshasa, not a Raksha or whatever.
And the thing is, it can be whatever it's going to end up being.
I didn't say anything in-game because my character had no idea what the hell was going on. But outside of the game, in my head, I'm going, oh, it's got to be this.
Even,
out of game for me. It's more fun if I don't know all that stuff, and it's a lot of information I don't need to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, having GM'd, I unfortunately do have a small amount of knowledge about monsters.
But also, it's a little bit
stuff,
yeah. And if you're GMing, you need to know that stuff.
And Eric has this in his game, and I won't necessarily have a place here, but I'll allow people to do this. Once you reach a level, if you realize that you reach level 10, and you're like, I'm looking ahead, and my feet suck. Is this not working? You have to allow a person to rebuild sometimes. Like, Eric has that place you can go and get
rid of
your...
That's actually part of the Arcana.
And that's cool. That's cool.
And I did have a character...
Reclassify your feats.
The one with the high charisma that we just had to go back and completely rebuild her as a cleric instead of...
The avatar.
Yeah, we had tried a class that was created out of a book. It was the avatar, and it was just
so much
worthless
work too.
And it was a lot of work.
Yeah, sadly,
totally underpowered.
Sadly, Green Ronin Publishing did put out a worthless book.
Yeah.
So we had to go back and rebuild it.
As a cleric, and it worked out.
Because that's what she was functioning as a cleric, but she didn't have all of the cleric bonuses.
Right.
So why not just go back and make her a cleric? For the benefit
who happens to have a... She focuses on her personality instead of...
Yeah, and we just... So that the stats didn't have to be rearranged, we just made her charisma-based instead of wisdom.
Right.
It was just easier.
Right. With, not just with D&D, what is it that you look for in a game? Just to say, I mean, if you are... You are joining up a game group. Do you try to be conscious of the type of game that it's going to be? I mean, obviously you need to. But
is it more of a comical game? Is it more serious? What character classes are other people playing, so that nobody's toes get stepped on? And what might they need? I mean, if you've already got 4 magic users, you don't need another one. If you've got 2 clerics, you don't need 3. So they probably need muscle power. If you go in and they've got 4 fighters and no cleric, I mean, it's a good bet that they could use a cleric. And that makes your character useful, and also, I mean, that makes it easier to have fun, because there's a need for your character, there's a place where your character can fit in.
Right.
It helps even out the group when you actually have players that are playing what are called ancillary roles. I'm sorry, ancillary, if you talk to some people. And it's the roles that are not the predominant forefront roles, and they're not the ones going out getting into fight and getting their heads shoved into their rib cages.
Well, what do you guys think of, because both of you have played online role-playing games, like World of Warcraft. How does that differ? Why do you approach that? I mean, the characters you play on that, do you do it in the same sense, or is it based because of how the online game is set up, or...
It depends on how the online game is set up.
All I have to say is, in some game systems I play male characters because the male models are fine, but in other games, like World of Warcraft, the male models are so hideously chud, ugly, they look like linebackers with small, tiny heads, that I can't play a male model, because just looking at it makes me ill. So you just look at it and you go, oh my god, it crawled out of the sewer.
I've never been tempted to play a male in World of Warcraft, because they are very unattractive, but... I know in World of Warcraft, a good number of the people, they don't know your real gender.
Yeah, I tried.
And I've found that most of them assume that I am male.
Really?
Yeah, even though I'm playing with a female model, they still assume I'm male.
I got into a big fight with a bunch of people in my guild because no one believed that I was a guy.
Well, I'm going to...
I was like, I'm a guy. And they're like, no. I'm like, yes, I am. I'm getting married to another one of the characters. That one right there, that's a woman. She's really a woman.
Well,
I'm a guy. Like,
we don't actually throw out what our genders are usually. We just go back and forth.
I've never had anyone presume what gender I was on an online role-playing game.
Well, our guild thought it was pretty funny, because at one point, one of the guys we talked to is like, he'd stop and say, him or... Her. And then they went, and this was towards me, are you male or female? I'm like, I guess you'll just have to wait to find out. never told him.
Now, are there...
I told him because I hated listening to them say, you know, she's doing this. No, it's he.
But my character's a she, so I don't care.
Yeah. Well, being a... Speaking from the male perspective, there are stigmas attached to being a gamer. We've talked about in previous shows, but the... are there any stigmas that you guys have noticed for being a woman that is into gaming at all?
The assumption that, well, there is a picture of the female gamer that is not necessarily accurate. It's just like the picture of the male gamer.
Mm-hmm. Only with boobs?
Yeah, only with boobs.
Boobs!
Some of the male gamers do have
the
boobs.
The fat beard.
Fat beard.
Minus the beard.
Boobs.
With bigger boobs.
Okay.
Boobs!
The fat no beard.
The fat no beard.
I actually find a lot of the people I work with think it's strange.
They just don't, get it, pretty much?
Yeah. Just
yeah,
don't understand.
I have learned not to really talk about it a whole lot because.
Well, I know from
really
my perspective, I do I don't hide the fact that I'm a gamer, but I also don't try to not for being ashamed or anything. It's just I don't want to be asked. Well, what is that? You know, because explaining what gaming is sometimes can be a chore.
I've tried that before,
but I don't think. I don't think the stigmas are really any different for male and female. I think they're the same. That geeky, antisocial person who sits in their mom's basement is kind of the stereotype from people who aren't involved in it. And we are...
At least we're not Satan worshippers anymore,
yeah.
I guess.
We're, yeah, at least...
Anymore? You stopped?
At least most of the Satan worship... At least most of the Satan worship stuff has gone away.
Yeah.
Like, the dark dungeons type of thing isn't the predominant way of looking at it anymore.
I do believe my parents thought it was something satanic when I was young.
See, and that's so funny, because my parents were just like, oh, he's doing this? That's a lot better than what he could be doing.
I do find it interesting that you guys didn't get brought into it by a family member. And that
I did.
That predominantly the three of us got brought into it by, like, I got... Older brother,
my uncle
brought
got
by
me
my
into
father,
it.
Older brother.
Cetera, you know.
I do have an older brother who's very into sci-fi. Mm-hmm. You know, he was the one who got me into Star Trek and Star Wars, and
my family's world
Indiana
is very into fantasy,
all the action,
sci-fi, just not role-playing.
It's just another way to do fantasy. Mm-hmm. Just another way to do fantasy. It's just like a fantasy book, except you're the character.
And like my stepfather always played like the online. Not online so much, because it's quite a while ago, but the video game role-playing games,
on
like Final Fantasy and Zelda, Ultima, the King's Quest games, things like that.
Apparently my parents did associate Zelda with role-playing.
Yeah.
Because we played a lot of Zelda.
Zelda's just awesome, though.
Well, I guess to sort of steer this towards wrapping up, the... When you're looking into a game, what is it from your perspective that you look for in a game?
The people that I play with.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much.
I have to be comfortable.
Yeah.
With the people I'm playing with. That's why I have never played in a game at Gen Con, because I'm very uncomfortable anyways when it comes to gaming. I don't feel that I'm a very good gamer. I've heard otherwise from some of the people I've gamed with, but it's difficult for me.
She means everyone she's gamed with, by the way.
It's difficult for me, so that's why I prefer to game with people that I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, I prefer to game with people I'm comfortable with, too. As far as the games themselves, just solid, fairly simple mechanics, and obviously I like Thaco, so I have a strange idea of what simple is, but... I mean, I trust you guys to pick out games that have good mechanics, but I remember playing, what was it, the Tri-Stat system.
Silver Age Sentinels, right?
Yeah, I've played BESM, and it was just awful, but Silver Age Sentinels, the Tri-Stat system worked out pretty well, and I think that...
It was also based on a 10-sided die, rather than, I think it was a 6-sided die.
Yeah, BESM was a...
Yeah, and... And also, understanding where the Tri-Stat system came from is that was better than the Champion system.
Yeah.
Just the idea of the Champion system.
I think...
Or is.
Yeah, a system, a good system is important because you don't really realize until you get totally bogged down
with rules how bad a system could be.
Yeah,
you really just want the GM to kind of say, "Hey, you got a +2 modifier to that."
Yeah,
right.
This is one of the reasons why I nixed my Shadowrun game is got heavy into the rules, reading the rules for how to run the game, and I went, "There's no way players are going to want to do this." You've got dice pools for combat. You've got dice pools for defense. You got dice pools for spells. And each one is an individually separate dice pool. People are going to get confused.
Simple is often better.
That's why D&D and Mutants and Masterminds, both of those are very simple.
I really like D&D. I like the Mutants and Masterminds. Actually, Earth Dawn I didn't mind, but it was
the new Earth Dawn
pretty much
really
the first one I played, so I didn't know anything else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think if I went back now and started trying to play D&D 2nd Edition, I'd be like, my God, why is this so complicated? If I went back and looked at the original Earth Dawn, I'd be like, why do I have to roll a different kind of die for every single thing I do? Which is kind of what you were talking about, Shadowrun. I think they had the same system.
They have basically the same system. The difference is you have pools of dice that you attribute to what you do for your actions. They're all D10. Everything's D10 in the new Shadowrun. But everything's got pools of dice. You have action dice you have a pool of dice to do skills when you're in a combat situation. You have a pool of dice to defend with that you have to roll. You only have so many dice to defend against however many attacks coming your way. It just gets really tedious.
You
have to decide how you're going to go.
You know what you can do? You could just take D&D or Dice 20 Modern and just make it a Shadowrun.
That's true, and it might be worth doing at some point in time because I really do like the Shadowrun setting. The Shadowrun setting is really neat. It's an interesting idea.
I was interested in playing Shadowrun.
But the system is just very, very complex.
So
I didn't even get into the hacking.
So running through as a whatever character you choose, saving the princess or whatever, getting the gold and beating up on monsters.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. That's pretty much what we do. We want to do.
Mm-hmm. I think we go about it in different ways, but ultimately, that's what we all like to do.
Play something that we aren't necessarily, expand our minds, expand our sometimes morals, depending on the character.
Chaotic neutral with evil tendencies. That was fun.
Oh yeah, all that treasure's mine. I'll give it to you once I collect it all. Here you go. That loot's mine. Here you go.
All right, well, we'll be back after this. Woo-hoo! Well, we're back, and today on our three-parter, it's actually going to be a...
Multiple-parter.
Multiple-parter. Rather than having a rant or a rave or anything like that, we actually all have a stack of reviews we've been neglecting to voice, and so we're going to be giving you out a number of reviews.
The review.
I will start off with a review of Blackburn Games' Algernon Files 2.0 and The Fires of War, the Algernon Files Volume 2. They're published under the Mutants and Masterminds Superlink program from Green Ronin. These are from Blackburn Games. The Algernon Files and Fires of War are two character compendiums, also with some setting information for use in your Mutants and Masterminds game. There are two Algernon Files books. There's Algernon Files and Algernon Files 2.0. The 2.0 book is available for Mutants and Masterminds 2nd Edition. The Fires of War and the regular Algernon Files book are just for 1st Edition Mutants and Masterminds. So, with the help of the conversion guidelines that you can find on the Mutants and Masterminds website from Green Ronin, you can convert any of those characters over pretty easily. The Algernon Files, the first book, is a book that is entirely a character compendium. It is available in both PDF and in print form. I do believe it's actually also available in a print in full color as well. It's a bit more on the expensive side, but that we're talking hardcover book, and the I can definitely tell you that the production quality on this is not quite up to scale as Green Ronin's Mutants and Masterminds stuff, but it is pretty darn close. It's very beautiful books. The Alice Among Files is about 144 pages long, while the Alice Among Files for Fires of War is about 128 pages. What it does is it actually breaks down heroes and villains into there's solo heroes, solo villains, and there's superhero groups and whatnot. It's pretty. The reason I really like it actually is it does present you with a setting that you can use if you want to buy the Mutants and Masterminds books and these books. You can have these settings out there, and you can just run it straight on from the book with just very little modification. But the way it also presents the characters is if you're, say you're a GM, you're running Mutants and Masterminds game, you have, and you need a villain for something, and you don't have time to sit down and actually make the villain up, and believe me, I can sympathize with that, you can actually flip open this book and just grab one out of there. It's laid out very well. The art is pretty good. It's not the best, but it's actually very nice. The each page, actually, they usually try to put it about every page is a character or a villain, or every that takes up one page or two pages, which makes it very nice, especially if you get the PDF. You can print out just one page of it if you need that character. The editing in it, it's actually very well edited, I thought. The characters are well built. There's very little in the way that I could spot as far as any mistakes in the game, in the system at all. I was really happy with the initial Algernon Files book. Is great for modern age superheroes. It has some very cool bases. It's got some great characters in it and some great villains. The Fires of War is actually part of their Algernon Files setting, and it's actually set during World War II, so it's more of a Golden Age style source book. So if you need a companion book for your Golden Age book from Green Ronin, this book is perfect for you, actually, because it's got your share of power mad Nazis and occultists that are running around doing their thing, with your very patriotic American, red-blooded American, hardcore American heroes, as well as your military-style characters and whatnot. I heartily recommend Algernon Files and Fires of War. You can get the PDF version of it for about $15, or the print version, the black-and-white print version, for about $27.95. The Fires of War has a similar price point. You can get the PDF for $15 or the print book for $24.95. I actually would recommend looking into them. They're some good books, some good products, well written, well done. They are available for those of you who are not in the Mutants and Masterminds. They are also available under the Hero system as well. So it's a little bit more more expensive side, obviously, because the Hero system has a bit more meat to it. But I would hardly recommend them. Fun games, Blackworm Games, we'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Actually, the first thing I'm going to do my review on is the Game Mastery map packs that we got. We got a little one. It's the map packs for the ends. It contains 18 full-color map cards of various different styles that you can actually connect together in random ways to create general layouts for an end. Mm-hmm. Whereas this wouldn't normally be useful for me because, unlike a lot of games I'm in, there's usually not a whole lot of fights or brawls that break out in the ends mm-hmm. and the taverns because...
And these were sent to us by Paizo.
Paizo, yeah. The cards are very well detailed, have layouts...
On?
You could probably use those dry erase markers. They have the laminate top.
Okay.
They're very well drawn out, laid out. The squares are very easily discernible, so you can see where the 5-foot squares are. There's enough cards in here. They're all one-sided. They're not double-sided like some of the other ones that they've released. Mm-hmm. They're all one-sided, but there's enough cards here that you can pretty much 18 different cards, and with 18 different cards, depending on the size of the actual end you're going to be making, you can pretty much make infinitely large. Also, it's probably about 6 or 7
You could also use it as reveal, too, so you don't have to put out the whole map for the whole land. You can reveal it a room at a time if you need to.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. They're very, very well drawn
how
out.
How much are they?
They are...
I think they're on about $10 or $12.
$12.99. So for $13, that's not a bad little thing. And on top of that, since they are cards with the squares, they have the same size of cards as your battle mat does. If you look at the size of the squares, you could lay this on top of your battle mat to represent the inn rather than having a physical building. So you could have a physical building, and then when we go into the building, you can lay down these cards and do the same thing. The artwork on the front of the pack is actually the least attractive artwork in the set, which is a couple people fighting in a bar. The cards are flat, they're stable, they have the laminate on the tops of them so that you can draw on them with the dry erase markers and erase it. They are some form of cardboard, of like postal card.
Yeah,
cardstock. So they're pretty durable, I would say. You have to actually work at it probably to destroy them.
It looks like they're about 5x7, I would say.
I would say 4x7s.
4x7s.
Yeah, I'd say 4x7s.
Would they work for something like Warhammer?
Maybe if you want to do an indoor fight. Mm-hmm. These are 5x8s.
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 So they're nice and portable. By the looks of it. So.
They're 5x8, so the interesting thing about Warhammer is the layout of the table is anywhere usually from 4 foot by 4 foot to 4 foot by 6 foot, so you need a lot of these cards to lay it out. But yeah, this could be done for doing indoor fighting for Warhammer, if you wanted to. You could, like, if you wanted to do Warhammer, the Warhammer Heroes, which is where you just use named characters and fight in specific locations.
Those bring up those interesting ones that actually WotC put out, which I was kind of curious about, the tiles which are about $10, $10 to $12. And they're two-sided.
They're double-sided. They have the laminate. Well, they don't have... They have, like, the gloss, like this does. So you might be able to write on them, because the gloss helps keep the ink from saturating it. The only way we could really test this is if we actually had any dry erase markers that we could just write on it right at the moment, and I don't. But they look like they're usable for that. So for $13, I'd say it's a pretty good deal. Now keep in mind,
if they're not, you can actually get yourself some personal lamination sheets and do it yourself if you need to. But they're not bad.
Also keep in mind that the map packs...
Great to be used with things like the Elite tools, I think, and obviously if you use many...
Yeah, the E-tiles there, I've been tempted on those. Mm-hmm. Except for the ink use, those would be pretty nice, because you can make whatever you want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, though, out of these Game Mastery sets, the map packs, this is one pack out of, I think, 6 or 7 packs that are already out. They don't have just ends. There's also... There's a forest one, there's an underground one, there's a camp one, there is a city one, a town one, and there's one other one other than this one. And for $13...
Road or something?
I think you're right, but I'm not sure on that. But for $13, it's a cheap, quick alternative. Like, if you don't have time to sit down and draw up a huge map for everybody to wander around...
You can just toss them down.
You can just toss them down and go to town. I don't think they're a bad deal. They are pretty specific, so you have to have a specific use for them. I mean, it's not like you can't lay down a tile and go, okay,
Looks like they have about 18 different map packs right now.
There's, really?
Forest, campsites, caravan, cavern, city, countryside, dungeon chambers, elven city, fortress, graveyard, haunted mansion, inns... Ruins, sewers, slums, temples, tournament, and village, looks like. And they range from about $10 to $13, looks like.
Yeah.
I think I might have the sewers one.
Yeah, I think you do. It was sitting right next to me last night.
Cool. But, yeah, I think they're not bad for the price of what you pay. They're pretty
those
good.
They come from the miniatures.
That's my first review.
Right. Well, these were two things that were sent to us. One is a Game Mastery. Both of these are from Paizo. One is the Carnival of Tears. It's by Tim Hitchcock and Nicholas Loge. L-O-G-U. Has a creepy-ass picture on the front of this evil clown guy. He's going to eat your babies. But anyway, like typical Game Mastery fashion, in the back you have the the PCs. They're non-typical PCs, I guess. I don't really understand why they say they're non-typical, other than the rogue has an intelligence of 8. and actually, the female sorcerer and the female cleric have an intelligence of 10. Smartest guy is the warrior, but anyway. That seems kind of wrong. But anyway, so in the Carnival of Tears, you have a town where it's a mining town, or a logging town, excuse me, and this carnival is coming back. And basically what has happened is nature has been pissed off. And so as the adventure goes on, at some point in the game, the Fae realm inhabits the carnival. And you have, like, carnival things. Like, there's a tent which has all of these farming and logging implements in it. Well, once the Fae take over, people go inside and get chopped up and ground up. There's an ice maze which has a minotaur in the center. Basically, they set him free, and he goes around and kills people. There's tents that are serving ale that turns people into trees. And it's basically, this adventure is to, one, figure out that this is happening, because the Fae have covered up all of this. So basically, the people going to the carnival are like, everything's fine! And then they're eating, like, baby popsicles and don't realize it. It's just twisted. Trying to find one here that's just like, just stands out. Oh, this one's just funny. They have a peep show. And at first it's a peep show. And there's another adventure in there where it's like, you can run into the owner of the peep show, and he's a horrible person, and you can try to help the girls escape. Well, when the Fae take over, though, there's a nymph who's the peep show. And so you walk in, she takes off your clothes, you go blind, and then the rest of the Fae murder you.
That sounds totally evil. If a carnival shows up in your game, I'm not sure.
Yeah. There's a pieting contest. Well, this one, though, is run by the Swinomancer. He's a giant anthropomorphic human, pig guy. There's a picture of him. And he has a giant, basically is this giant machine that shoots, like, rotten entrails and crap at people. And there's a ice sculpting where basically they're freezing people, and then they get other people to sculpt them. And so as you're sculpting, you're hacking off parts, and like, people are bleeding. And they have like this in here, they have this table that says if so many hours goes by, this is how many people get murdered. And you basically have to stop it until the whole town is basically knocked down. Like, there's different levels of if you win, and different levels of can the town survive from this many people being murdered.
Who the hell created this?
It's just, it's weird. It's twisted. And at the end, you have to defeat this guy called the Cold Rider. I don't really know what to say much about it, other than it's just creepy.
That's messed up.
Twisted and evil.
I mean, if you like that kind of thing, like if you like carnivals that are twisted, hey, go for it. I probably wouldn't use it. But we all know that the Fae are completely nuts. Okay. The other one is the Pathfinder, Rise of the Rune Lords. This is number 2. The Skinsaw Murders. And it's basically about a cult that murders people and the undead creatures that are assisting them. There's actually a noble family whose house is haunted. You have a haunted house. You have wights in the basement. You have undead ghoul bats. But my favorite picture is the Skinsaw Man. He's actually halfway through. He's like the minor bad guy. His name is Alderaan Foxglove, the Skinsaw Man. And he is used to be this aristocrat who went insane and was turned into this ghoul. And his pitcher...
That's kind of cool looking.
He's cool looking, but he's creepy. He's like this very thin nobleman dressed in noble's clothes, covered in blood, this giant knife. I mean, he's a serial killer. And as you go on in this game, you go into a different town, and you find out there's a whole cult who are murdering people. And again, like all these games, in the back, you have the characters again, with the rogue who has intelligence of 8, and the cleric and sorcerer who have intelligence of 10, and our fighter is leading them all into death. I like these books. Is this an adventure I'd necessarily run? No. This adventure is well written.
Mm-hmm. How independent is it to run? I mean, could you run it on its own, or would you have to run it as part of their Pathfinder series?
You could run it on your own. You need to modify a few things. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you would need to... The cult would need to be... There's some, like, details that you'd need to just yank out or change the names to.
Right, okay.
And some of the stuff in the adventure would need to be... Like, some of the encounters and stuff would need to be modified. Because
right.
you're going to have things from the first book mm-hmm. that they'll actually say, this player, you would remember this character from the... Like, the aristocrat in here, mm-hmm. this foxglove, is actually from the first book.
Okay.
You save him. And part of the thing that you talk about in this book is he actually is obsessed with one of the players. He's either obsessed with, he's either loves them, hates them, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the thing with the quest is as you go on, he's leaving these weird clues. So that would be kind of hard to modify.
Right.
It would be doable. But you're going to have to figure something out.
Now, the book, as far as with the Pathfinder stuff, it's not just the adventure in the book, isn't it?
No, it has monsters in the back. Actually, I like the monsters. Just to give it a quick... You have... Well, okay, you have the Pathfinder journal, which is cool, actually. Not very useful
mm-hmm.
in the sense of... I don't know what I'd use the journal for, but it is interesting. But then
gives
they
nice
go into
information on various different settings and stuff.
But it's only really for their world.
Well,
like,
yeah.
You'd have to modify it. But the bestiary in here is pretty sweet. the Carrion Storm are some undead ravens. You have the Boggard, which are these frog people. They're fine, I mean, whatever. There's these fairy creatures, which are actually gifts from this particular goddess. They have the goddess in here. The Faceless Stalker, creepy-ass creature. But my favorite one in here is they've actually redid the Revenant.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they have a whole Revenant template, which I haven't seen, actually, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's nice. And then the Lamias, these are the matriarchs, actually. You know, the lion
mm-hmm.
women. Well, the matriarchs are actually cursed with snakes. So they're women with snake lower halves, which are creepy and evil. They also in here actually have a new religion.
Really?
They have a couple of religions, but the main one they focus on is actually, even though this whole quest is about this evil, horrible, twisted murder, it's Densa, the Song of the Spheres, and she's a very... they actually break down this goddess very well. I mean, this is a goddess I would almost use in my world, just because they've done such a good job at it.
Mm-hmm.
They introduced a new domain in here. So those parts I really like. The adventure's written well, can be used, but the god portion and the bestiary, very nice. And then they also talk about what's next month. I don't know. I like the Pathfinder books. I just can't bring myself to getting a whole subscription to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The problem I have with them is they're very well done. The artwork's incredible.
Artwork is sweet.
The actual adventure path is usually really good, really interesting.
Oh yeah, they're well written.
Bestiaries are really good. I actually like the Pathfinder journal because I look at it and go, huh, I can cut that out and paste that right.
There
in
is that.
With
you
no
could do that. That is true.
The
that
only problem
true.
I have is the price. I just can't justify spending $20 a month
per.
And I'm not
going to. If you get a subscription,
it's down to $15.
And I'm not going to argue with some of the people that have read Dungeons and Dragons, the two magazines, for a long time. Pathfinder is a great magazine for them.
Oh, I will not say that it's a bad magazine.
Paizo?
It's not. It's great.
Paizo has good writers. Even that Carnival of Tears, it's well written.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just twisted.
Right.
That's a don't recommend it. Unless you really, really like Twisted Carnivals.
The only people I would recommend...
There's a Swinomancer.
The only person I would, from your review, of the only people I would recommend the Carnival of Tears to are people who are playing D&D that love Call of Cthulhu.
Well, it
because
is...
you have to be really twisted. Because from the way that setting is set up, it sounds like one false step and you're dead. It's like the one that I did, the Entombed with Pharaohs that I read.
Well,
it's just
not the player characters themselves, but if you don't save enough people, you've allowed a whole town. Because there's actually, I can't find the chart, but there's a chart in there that talks about how many people are murdered at each ride, each hour. And if you don't stop it, they actually, the GM goes in and figures out, did they lose 25% of their population? Did they lose up to, I think it's something ridiculous, up to, you know, 50%. And the city can't survive. They just break down into, so it's interesting. It's just not what I would run.
Yeah, I don't think I would ever run that, and I'm pretty brutal sometimes. But yeah, it sounds like it's along the same lines as the one that I read.
Paizo is a good ride.
Yeah, the writing is well done. I just don't agree with the way they have the setting set up in some of their adventures.
It's just not something I don't know if I would get those. Yeah. If they want to send us more free ones, we'll gladly review them.
The recently, Titanic Games actually sent us a copy of a game called Key Largo. And I got a chance to sit down and play the basic rules of it, for Key Largo, and it is I believe it's a German game that's been translated for the first time in the United States. It was designed by Paul Randles before he passed away in 2003. And Titanic Games has now made it available in the United States. It's a full color board of an island in the Florida Keys. It has 5 wooden boats, a diving helmet, token, 130 cards, 15 diver tokens, 40 hoses, tridents, and weight tokens. It has like Monopoly type money, and it's a beautiful game in the production design. It actually really reminded me of the Fantasy Flight style board game. So I mean, it's very nicely done.
Is that the one where your goal is to dive down into sunken ships and steal treasure from them?
The point of the game is you have 10 days before the hurricanes come in, and you have to you're supposed to be the player with the most money at the end of 10 days, and you get money by diving for sunken treasure and then selling it in the marketplace. It has some interesting mechanics in that, like if multiple players are in the in one location, like if multiple players are in the market, that affects how much you get for certain products. So like if more people are selling goods, the less you get for it, or if more people are selling artifacts, the more you get for it, that sort of thing. And gold has you can sell gold, which has just a basic commodity. It also goes both ways, is if you go to buy equipment in the market, if just one player is there, it's cheaper. Whether if you have two players there, it's more expensive to buy stuff. Because of demand. And the same thing goes, you can go to the tavern and purchase and buy, like hire new divers and stuff, whatnot, but you can divers go up in price if more people are there, because obviously you have to pay more and compete. There is a bit of strategy involved in the game. I have not played it with the advanced rules yet, which adds some encounters and adds a few extra bits to it. I'll do a follow-up review on that once I've been able to do that. But the strategy involved in the game is you have these divers that you start off with a diver, and you can go to shallow wrecks, and to get to medium wrecks or deep wrecks, you need to have multiple hoses. One hose will let your diver go down to a medium wreck. Two will let him go down to a deep wreck. And if you go down there, they grab one thing and they come back up, unless you have a weight to discard. If you discard a weight, they can grab a second card. The tridents are used to fight off monsters, because in the wrecks, there can be a monster there. Because when you go down to a wreck, you just draw the top card and see what's there. And the number of wrecks differs depending on how many players there are. And the obviously deep wrecks have much better treasure than the shallow wrecks. The trade-off, unfortunately, with the monsters is if you don't have a trident, according to the rules, your diver gets scared off and gives up diving and leaves. Honestly, I just play it as the monster eats him. It's the same thing. Same effect happens. But if you have a trident, you kill the monster. Thing is, if you don't have a trident and your diver gets eaten, the monster gets shuffled back into that wreck randomly.
Oh.
Until someone bags that monster, it's going to stay there. And you also run the chance of having multiple monsters, where if like you have a monster, you kill it, and you draw the next card, and it's another monster, you get eaten.
Because you use the trident up?
Because you use the trident up, yes. And it was a fun little game. I only played it with three people, but it's 3 to 5 people can play, and I think the more people that actually are involved in the game, I think it'll be a bit better. It'll be a bit better of an experience. I enjoyed it. The strategy became a bit more clear to me at the end of the game, especially when you're trying to sort of weigh in and try to figure out where the other players are going to go, because each round you get two actions, a morning action and an evening action, and you can't do the same action twice in a day, so you can't go wreck diving twice in the same day. So it's an interesting way to look at an interesting game. I definitely want to take a bit closer look at it and try out the advanced rules that adds the encounters and also adds thievery to it, so there's a bit more backstabbing involved. But I believe it's a German game called Key Largo, put out by Titanic Games, which is available through the Paizo website.
How much is it?
It is a $40 game. Right now, my first impressions of playing it, I don't think it'd be worth $40. I put it more at $25 or $30, maybe. But I will reserve final judgment on it until I've had a chance to play it with the advanced rules. The other thing we actually got a chance to sit down and play was a game from Out of the Box Games called Tutankhamen.
Designed by
Reiner Knizia.
This is the one where you use the power tools to defeat mummies, right?
Yes.
Yes.
I like out of the box games typically, and Reiner Knizia is a very good designer. Tutankhamen, once we figured out exactly how to play it, I could see it had a good entertainment value. The setup was kind of a bit messy, I thought, and the layout of the game, I think, doesn't really marry itself well with children, but the game says it's for 8 and up. I don't think that age point is quite correct, because any games need to pull out power tools and able to play has issues. The game comes with these golden coins and a plastic pyramid, and what you're supposed to be able to do is you give tribute to Tutankhamen as you collect artifacts along a randomly generated winding path to the pyramid. Now, with at least the copy we got, we could see where the slot in the pyramid was supposed to be for the little gold coins, but the slot was not bored out. So we actually had to pull out a power drill to make a hole in it. And any game that requires that you need that you do that, I have issues with.
Whoa.
Once we got past the initial setup of the game and three of us got into the game, the strategy became a bit clearer near the end, I think. And it was an interesting game. I think it's a way too complicated for
8-year-olds.
I think it'd be more along the 12 years old and up. another game you've got that Gold Digger has the same coins.
Yeah, I haven't played Gold Digger yet. But all I want is the coins. If they could just send me coins, I'd be happy.
But, I mean, those are my thoughts on it. Nathan also...
My feeling on it, and this was echoed by Michael, was that it took longer to set up than it took to play.
Right.
For three people.
That's always bad.
The board is randomly generated by everybody picking up a tile and placing a tile on a winding path until all the tiles are down, face up, in a winding path.
Right.
Well, the problem we had was that everybody wanted it to go a single solitary direction. There was no wind. And it's like, the path has to wind. And everyone's like, I don't understand.
The path doesn't have to wind.
But having a straight path...
The path is whatever it ends up being. Yeah,
the straight path would have taken, like, the entire table length on a 6-foot-long table.
Uh-huh.
And the
way that the tiles go together is it really, it's like if someone spills their drink or knocks the table, it's going to jumble everything up.
Yeah, everything falls apart.
That doesn't
work
well.
They need a pre-constructed path
and the
built
rules,
onto a board.
The rules were very unclear until we actually sat down and started to try to play it.
Yeah,
there was a lot of things in the rule book that I just didn't understand.
That's why I'm kind of afraid of Gold Digger. I looked at it. I haven't played it yet.
Uh-huh.
But if it's... we'll see.
Right.
I was not thoroughly impressed with that one. Out of the two we played that night, that one was not very good. My next review, I'm actually going to review the other game we played, which was also by Reiner Knizia, called Fish Eat Fish.
Another one from Out of the Box Games.
Yes, from Out of the Box Games. It is... does not have a price listed on the back, but I'm guessing it's probably $35 to $40. It's very simple. Mm-hmm. There is up to five players.
Definitely a family game.
It's definitely a family game.
And I think definitely, unlike Tutankhamun, Common, I think it's a game that kids would really get into.
No power tools game?
The colorful fish and whatnot.
No, you have five different colors of fish. You don't use, usually with less than five players, one of the colors is what's called neutral fish. It just is used to fill up the rest of the board. Your goal is to go around and eat fish. You either eat your own fish, and you build up stacks of fish, which gives you a score. Each fish is worth 1 point. And when you go to attack someone who is different from you, like say Ethan's yellow and I'm green, and I go to attack him, I'm like, aha, I have a stack of two fish, you have a stack of one fish. All right, we face off. You pull a card, you have a stack of cards, you only have 11 cards for the entire game. When you're out of cards, you're done.
And some of the cards have a numerical value on it, which you add to your attack strength.
Which adds to the number of fish you have in the stack.
And there's two octopus cards, which allow you
run
to
you away.
Combat, and then there's a shark card
which automatically wins
unless they play a
shark card. Or a shark card. If they play a shark card,
if you tie in any way, both stacks go away. Both stacks are killed.
Cool.
But, your goal is to get the largest stack by the end of the game.
By eating fish.
And you do it by eating either the neutral fish, which are purple, or your own fish,
depending
as well as
on
the players.
Players fish. There, yeah. There are, obviously.
But your goal is to have the largest stack. And it's very entertaining because there's a certain level of strategy.
The setup was real quick and it played really quick too.
Yeah. 20 to 30 minutes is a very good estimate.
We played about for 15 minutes and we were done.
It looks nice.
Yeah, the board is very well laid out. Mm-hmm. It's even got the little starfish.
Oh, the fish!
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very nicely done.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'd like to play this.
Yeah, it's a great game. We very much enjoyed it.
It's a fun little...
That's to tell you
I would definitely put it as a party game. If you're used to, hardcore strategy games, it's not going to be something you're going to want to play.
No, people who
but
play,
it's something you can play with your kids or play with people who aren't horribly into the hardcore games. It was a lot of fun. I liked it. I had
a lot of fun playing it. Yeah, Becca won. What are your thoughts on that?
Even though it's an elimination game, it plays so quickly that if you get eliminated, wait 5 minutes and you guys can play again.
It was a very quick game. I will agree with that.
I do like the art.
Mm-hmm. It's very simple.
Very easy to learn.
But it's cool looking.
It's very quick to pick up. It was like, we sit down, we read. I read the instructions out loud. And
all in all, it took about 5 minutes and we were ready to play. Yeah. So.
It was good.
Fish eat fish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Tabletop does not have it, actually, surprisingly.
We've got a copy.
Yeah, the guy had never heard of it, but I told him, Phil had never heard of it, but the lady that was there, I think her name's Cynthia, the one that does the board games a lot, I told her if she's looking for more family-oriented games, that was definitely one to check out.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked it. I would recommend it.
Oh, yeah.
Even to people who are into hardcore games, if you want just a light little fast adventure game you can, or a fast game that you can play on an occasion when you have 15, 20 minutes and four people to play, it's worth it.
It's about on par with, you know, like, you know, your games like Sorry and Hungry Hungry Hippos and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's colorful. Kids will love it, but my point is that it's not Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Yeah,
it's not
this
that.
Looks
it's,
much
it's,
than
it's oddball
Hungry.
Enough that that it's not going to be something that you've
you
seen
can
before.
Lose
but it's fine.
Eyes.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. I was going to talk to you about your iPad. I thought you were just being a pirate, really.
Yeah.
Is a Hungry Hungry Hippos accident?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good to know.
It's pretty bad.
But yeah, it's really neat. I heartily recommend it for family people, especially if they want to have a board game that they can play with their kids. Because this is definitely one they can play.
At some point.
What?
When we have
Fish Feet Fish?
Yeah.
Just tell me when you want me to bring it over.
Cool.
It was definitely worth grabbing. Toot and Common, not so much, but out of the games to review, this one was definitely worth reviewing. I heartily recommend it.
How much is it?
I don't know. It doesn't have a price in the box. I'm guessing 30 to 35, maybe 40. But it's very well done. My guess is...
I actually had five of these, but now I only have four because I loaned one out. But Planet Stories has re-released through Paizo, it looks like. I believe it's through Paizo. These were actually...
Yeah,
this is Paizo on the back.
Oh, I
bought this one at Borders. Yeah. Yeah, the rest. Some of these were actually picked up at Paizo, but then I also bought the Anubis Murder from Borders.
Fish Eat Fish is $24.99.
Oh, okay.
$24.99. Oh, well, that's a great price. I'd recommend that heartily then.
Planet Stories. Planet Stories is used to be a magazine. Actually, I think they still are out. They've been around for a long stinking time, 1930 something.
Jim Collins, $14.99.
Yeah,
but basically
that
they put out
sure
sci-fi and fantasy stories. And the four in my hand is Gary Gygax, The Anubis Murders, Michael Moorcock, The City of the Beast, Henry Kuttner, Elak of Atlantis, Leia Brackett, The Secret of Shinart, and the one I loaned out was The Kiss of the Black Goddess. I can't remember who wrote it, though. But these books... Each one is different, and each one is a little bit weird. You can tell they used to be in magazines, but The Secret of Shinart is actually two stories, and they're with an individual called Stark. Stark is basically kind of like he's a criminal. Who is actually trying to fight the good fight. He was a...
Are you thinking Black God's Kiss?
That's the other one.
By C.L. Moore.
That one was weird. It's as a very strong female lead. She is a warrior lady who actually ends up going into this alternate realm with these really weird deities. It's very Call of Cthulhu-esque. But the Secret of Shinart is two different stories with the Stark character in both of them. It's interesting. I don't want to give too much of it away. It's the People Talisman is the second one. And Stark is a warrior, he's a criminal, but he's also a barbarian. He grew up on Venus in the far future and was raised by aboriginal Venus people.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also and this all happens on Mercury. He was raised on Mercury. But this happens on Mars. It was pretty neat. Elak of Atlantis is your high fantasy on Mars. I'm sorry. It's been a while since I read this. Elak of Atlantis is actually on Earth, on Atlantis. Elak is a prince who gave up his throne, and now he's a rogue. It's him and his halfling buddy. I don't like Elak. He's not a very likable guy. And his helper, his little friend, the halfling, is not likable either. I've got nothing against the story itself. The story is neat, but I kept hoping for Elak to be eaten. I just wanted something to eat him and end it. And nothing did.
That means you've got something against it.
Well, and I no, but I like the writing and I like the weirdness that was going on. And there's magic and everything. It's okay. Michael Moorcock's City of the Beast, Warriors of Mars. This one was sweet. It's about an American physicist who's working on teleportation and is transported by a mistake into the far distant past, mm-hmm. where he meets a princess named Shazala, who's a princess on Mars, and he must fight the terrible blue giants of Argazoon, whose ravaging hordes threaten the whole planet. It's sweet. It ends like it's actually him telling the story. He runs into a writer, the physicist, Kane of Old Mars. He's Kane something or other. I don't know what his last name is. Not Kane Astroff, but Kane something or other. Anyway, he's in Paris, and he runs into this writer, and he's like, "You're not going to believe my story." And he's like, "Well, tell me." So he does. And he gets transported to Mars, like I said. He runs into this princess. And strangely enough, all the women are naked. Well, they wear pants. Anyway.
Sounds very pulpy.
It's very pulpy.
I like the giant blue giant on the front.
The blue giant, yeah. There's somebody leading the blue giants. You have to fight them and everything. And at the end, he's getting ready to... You find out that the princess is going to marry this other guy who actually betrays them all. And he's like, ha ha ha. And
not that anybody else wanted to read the book.
Oops.
I'm excited about this book. I won't tell you how it ends. How about that?
So you recommend that one?
I do recommend that one. The one by Gary Gygax, The Anubis Murders, was a very good book. Don't want to destroy any of it, but I'll just read the back here. Gary Gygax, father of fantasy roleplay and co-creator of Dungeons & Dragons, weaves a fantastic tale of warring wizards that spans the world, from the pyramids of ancient Egypt to the mist-shrouded towns of medieval England. Someone is murdering the world's most powerful sorcerers. And the trail of blood leads straight to Anubis, the sullen god known by most as the Master of Jackals. And the main character, Magister Seton Inhotep, personal philosopher wizard of the Pharaoh, can he reach the distant kingdom of Avalonia and put an end to the Anubis murders? The main character in this, Inhotep, is awesome. His assistant... This warrior chick that's his bodyguard daughter, kind of, it's complicated. But anyway, he's like Sherlock Holmes, who's Egyptian, and just it's just awesome. I recommend this one. I think this one's better than The City of the Beast. And actually, the other one he wrote,
The Sekhmet Chronicles or whatever.
Yeah,
I'd like to add The Black Gods. Kiss, or whatever that one was called. I read that. It was in our bathroom for quite a while. I did not find it to have a strong female lead. I found it to have a very chauvinistic overtone.
It was very chauvinistic. I mean, right. The female character I thought was powerful, but...
She was physically strong, but it had very chauvinistic overtones to it. I didn't like that book very well.
Okay. Now, the other Gary Gygax one you're talking about was the Samarkand Solution?
Yes.
Yes.
Comes out in April.
It's already out.
It's a reprint.
Oh, wait, no, the reprint is not out. You're right.
The reprint comes out in April.
I was given them. Out of these books, I would... Elak, I just
hear Elak, and I think of the anagram of it, which is...
I mean, if it's only 12, it's $13. They're all $13, so... Secret of Shinarat, it's fun.
And looks like at the end of the year they're planning on reprinting Death in Delhi.
Okay, I don't know that one. I would recommend the Gary Gygax ones and the Michael Moorcock City of the Beast. I know I've destroyed the story for everyone, but...
I'll do some creative editing on that. How's that?
Just replace it with Smurfs. It was a good... This was the first one I read.
Really?
And then the Black... what is it? Black God's Kiss or whatever. I thought she was powerful, but you are right. It was very chauvinistic.
Well, considering probably
I remember
him
telling me about it, and it's so awesome, and then she did this, and I was like, that's the most sexist male bondage fantasy thing I've ever heard in a book.
So you have four of them, right? You have the Anubis Murders, City of the Beast, Black God's Kiss.
Well, actually, I bought Anubis Murders on my own, so I actually got... I have five altogether.
But you liked the planet stories well enough to go out and buy one.
I like all
the
planets.
Secret of Cinnarats?
Yes.
Is that the other one?
Which, and that's actually...
And it wasn't a bad book. I just thought it was chauvinistic.
No, and that's a good thing to point out. I didn't really catch the weird bondage stuff.
He didn't catch on to the chauvinistic and weird, well, not really bonded, but like kind of like Wonder Woman type of thing.
Right.
He didn't catch on to that until I said something about it.
Yeah, until he said something. I just thought she was a warrior woman who was going around killing people, fighting. But then there was the creepy god thing, and
I was like, Wonder Woman.
After she pointed it out, it is chauvinistic. But for these, I mean, these were written in...
Yeah, they were written quite a while ago.
Yeah,
so
a lot of them were.
It wasn't out
of
character. Like,
for quite a while.
Gary Gygax,
it wasn't, like,
though,
outside the tone of the time.
Anubis' Murder and the other one.
The Samarkand Solutions.
Yeah, Samarkand Solutions should come out.
You don't see the other character as much in that one, but in Anubis' Murders you do. These characters are sweet. That really, this Inhotep, and I wish they would put her name on the back, because she just kicks all sorts of ass.
Hmm.
Oh, it's just Rachel. It's Rachel, she used to be a... She's trying to train her to be a mage, and instead she's like, I like to kill people.
Black Ops
Kids. Can't fault her for that.
Anubis Murder.
Oh, the Anubis Murder.
Yeah, she,
A lot of these were originally published in the 30s.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of them were. I mean, Anubis Murder.
Oh, like
the
City
90s.
Of the Beast. This one was way back. I mean, this is total pulp.
Yeah.
You know, the princess is... she's kind of like, I need to be saved, and then she turns around and like shoots people. I mean,
I guess that's the thing. The other one was very pulp.
Right,
they're all pulp.
Yeah,
the only one that's not quite pulp
is the
Anubis Murders. Not pulp.
Right.
Good book. I guess I've heard a lot of people say they like this one.
You lack of Atlantis.
It reminds me of Kale.
Can't.
Kale of Mars. I don't know if you've ever read any of those stories, but there were some short stories from the 50s about a character called Kale of Mars, and he was this man from Mars who went around and shot stuff.
Well, I think the classic one's John Carter of Mars, really.
Well, John Carter of Mars is by Ray Bradbury, though.
Well, the first thing you meet... This is when you meet Eli.
No, not Ray
this
Bradbury.
Is Kane of Old
this
Mars.
This is Kane
is
of
that
Old
who
Mars.
You're talking about?
No, Kale. The name is Kale. K-A-L-E.
Well,
it's for
Elac,
published in
the
Fantastic
first time you
stories.
Meet Elac, he is stealing...
John Carter of Mars was done by Tarzan. So.
No, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
The first time you meet Elac...
That was not Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. He did the Lost World, not Tarzan.
I'm trying to think of who did Tarzan then. I know the name. It's on the tip of my tongue.
The first time you meet Elac, he's stealing another guy's wife. And then he stabs the guy. Is the guy a dick? Yes. But that's the first time. And then in the next story, he's dumped her. You don't even know where she is. And you're just sitting there going, okay.
Oh, thank you.
And his little halfling buddy, he's drunk all the time. He's just this drunk halfling. All he wants to do is drink. And they kill these random people in a bar. They're like, he insults someone. The guy stands up, they kill him.
Whoa.
I'm just sitting there going, really?
Yeah. Doesn't sound like my style.
Elac of Mars.
I didn't really like Elac of Mars. The Cursed City of Atlantis. I'm sorry, I keep saying Mars because I'm stuck on the Mars one.
Kale of Mars.
But the Cursed City was kind of cool because it's multiple stories, all in Atlantis. The Cursed City was cool, but that's just because they're...
Hopefully we'll continue to get copies of them. So.
The planet stories themselves, though, I mean, I would recommend
a subscription to it at 20% off cover price.
I was tempted. I was very tempted to do so because they're nice. Even the one I don't like.
That's awesome.
Nice.
I'll have to read them at some point in time.
There you go.
I don't have time right now.
We'll just put them in the bathroom.
That's the best place to read them.
I want to read this City of the Beast first. It sounds cool.
Alrighty.
I want to read the one about the guy who randomly kills people.
You like him, Atlantis?
You can tell me if you like him, because I didn't like him.
Well,
Henry Kuttner's the author of The Last Mimsy, and he wrote this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Last Mimsy was supposed to be really good.
And for all I know, I'll get a bunch of crap about Elac of Atlantis is the greatest ever, and be like, well, I hated him.
This is all opinion. Remember, reviews are opinion based. That's why reviews will never be exactly the same from person to person, because some people like stuff, others don't.
Best ever.
But I think that's probably enough reviews for this episode. Thank you for listening. Tune in next time, I guess.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. You can find us on the web at www.canadiancrusaders.com. The Gamers Haven Podcast is a member of the Vorpal Network at www.vorpalnetwork.com. Gamers Haven and Thousand Monkey Productions are copyright 2008 and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Stop by our website to check out our actual play feed, fill out our feedback guest book, or hit us on the forums. Music on the show is used with permission by Joe Hero Band, www.joehero.com. And this has been a Thousand Monkeys production.